violate their conscience. Nobody signed up to violate their deeply held beliefs. And you know what? There are DOD policies that can protect you from having to exercise that, and we
Mike
can help you
Price,
exercise that.
We want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director for the Center on Conscience and War. Tune in tonight at 7 to our live stream at democracynow.org for our 30th anniversary celebration of Democracy Now! Featuring Angela Davis and Patti Smith and Michael Stipe and so many others. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour. You're listening to KFAI. Please make a pledge of support. It's listener supported. The number to call is 612-375-9030. That's 612-375-9030, or pledge online at kfai.org. It really matters. Thanks so much.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.
And if you would like to keep Democracy Now! Here on the local airwaves, let us know. Do you want to support it and keep it on the air? You do? I've got an easy solution. You can do exactly that by calling 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Operators are standing by and ready to take your call. I personally think that Democracy Now! Is worth every penny, and I bet that you do too. So please give us a call and help support commercial-free public radio with a financial donation. Good afternoon, and welcome to Mini Culture Presents. I'm your host, Michael Whetstone. It is Pledge Drive here on KFAI. Give us a call to keep Democracy Now! And all of KFAI's other wonderful programs in your ears by giving us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Today, I'm going to be airing the latest brand spanking new hot off the press piece from the Mini Culture team. It's a story about ballet rock operas being put on here in the Twin Cities by two different troupes. Dear me, if Timothy Chalamet had just heard this story, he may very well have an Oscar in his hot little hands right now. Personally, I think he deserved to win for his portrayal of Bob Dylan. Not at all for Marty Supreme, but don't the Oscars often run a year behind, or so they say anyway? I mean, he spent 5 years learning how to play the guitar and sing like Bob Dylan, and then spent some time so that he could pretend to look like he was hitting a ping pong ball. It's not even close. But you're not going to want to miss hearing about this reimagining of the art form for a modern age. We are going to fill our plate with a heaping load of other recent Mini Culture stories today. All work that has been created right here at the radio station by our great cast of local producers. I'm literally going to be laying out examples of why KFAI is such a valuable asset to your Twin Cities community. Local stories about Minnesota art, Minnesotan culture, and Minnesota history, all from Mini Culture here on KFAI. These stories and this reporting is unquestionably on the pulse of the city, as is the rest of KFAI, but we need you to keep that blood pumping through our veins. Keep KFAI alive with a pledge today. Give us a call at 612-375-9030 or visit kfai.org. Today we are going to be hearing stories from Sheila Regan, Dixie Treichel, Allison Young, Matthew Schneeman, Michelle Brooke, Arme Rivard. I'm hoping to get in all these folks. I might be missing someone too. We will see. But before we get to that, I'd like to dust off my recording of KFAI spokesperson Charlie Parr. This was recorded when Live from Minnesota taped him playing in Austin, Minnesota in 2016. It is one of my favorite things Mini Culture has ever done. Credit to Daniel Zamzow and Todd Garneau. You should for sure hear it if you haven't. Charlie Parr, Live from Minnesota, in concert and conversation. You can find it on the Mini Culture SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/anyway. But anyway, here is Charlie Parr, who has something to say.
Listening to KFAI, you'll like be surprised at what's on there. And for me, it's always been a pleasant surprise because I'm like, whoa, I'm hearing music that I haven't heard maybe in my life. KFAI has always been that for me. And I've been fortunate because I traveled around the country and I've been lucky enough to find those stations throughout the country that are like that, true community radio stations. And I tune in and I love them. It's because it's people. It's like folk music, you know. We have our love of folk music because of accessibility, because it's accessible to us. It's our music. You know, KFAI feels like our radio station because the people that run the station, the people that play the music, and the people that are behind the scenes, they're people that live in the neighborhood, and you can know them. You know what I mean? That's what I love about KFAI.
And there you have it from one of our absolute favorite people, KFAI spokesperson Charlie Parr. Thank you, Mr. Parr. And if you agree with Charlie Parr, and I know that you do, or you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now, give us a call. It is Pledge Drive here at KFAI. Please let us know that you love having KFAI on your radio dial, in your pocket, in your ears. Give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030. Or if you're shy, you can visit KFAI.org and click donate. Thank you again for your support. And if you want to share any of these stories with your friends or family, you can easily find them all on the Miniculture SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/miniculture. And remember, it is Pledge Drive here on KFAI, so please let us know that you love having KFAI on your radio dial, in your pocket, in your ears. Give us a call at 612-375-9030, 612-375-9030, or you can visit KFAI.org and click the donate button. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to 10,000 Fresh Voices, a project of Miniculture. I'm your host, Erica Janik. What happens when you add electric guitar, high energy vocals, and upbeat percussion to your ballet? For ballet companies, they hope it adds up to a lot more people in the audience. An outgrowth of rock operas, rock ballets are reimagining the art form for a modern age. KFAI's Sheila Regan has the story.
The audience that showed up to the Fitzgerald Theater for the Twin Cities Ballet's production of Romeo and Juliet were ready to rock. Rock ballets are trending as a way to attract new audiences to a classic form. At the Fitzgerald Theater, Teresa Tucker was a repeat customer, but she doesn't consider herself a typical ballet fan.
Just what is rock ballet?
Tucker got turned on to the show by her daughter and has come to see it 2 years in a row because she loves the music of the band Queen.
It's the music, it's the energy, it's just so fun to see the dancers and the music, it's the choreography, it's amazing.
Kelly Tucker, a preschool teacher, learned about the show from a Facebook ad. She thinks the rock music really adds to the ballet watching experience.
Ballet is, it's fine. Like, I went to school for performing arts. I've seen ballet. But the fact that it's the music of Queen and Romeo and Juliet, which is such a classic story, I think it's going to be awesome.
Artistic directors Denise and Rick Vogt had been planning on producing a rock ballet for decades, first taking on short scenes when they were young dancers together living in Germany.
But we had done different small pieces, you know, a 15-minute piece or a single movement to, you know, Prince, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, sometimes with a band, sometimes not.
Later, they'd move to Minnesota and grow their company to the point where they felt they had the capacity for a full rock ballet.
We needed a company not to hire in as a quick project because we didn't have that kind of funding, but dancers who were there that we could choreograph on and build out the story.
In 2018, they presented Pink Floyd's The Wall for the first time at the Kohl Center in Minneapolis.
A lot of people were just fascinated by that whole idea. They said, oh, how can you do a ballet to Pink Floyd, to rock music? Like, how can you not? It's all music, you know, and it tells a story. It has movement and emotion and feeling. And The Wall is a much deeper story than most people realize.
The audience loved it.
There were people who had never been to ballet before.
For the Votes, rock music lends itself to their company's mission to make ballet accessible, relatable, and fun.
We were facing issues where people were thinking ballet wasn't relevant. They felt it was elitist, not approachable. They couldn't relate to it. So we try to do stories that people can relate to using music they can understand and relate to in a way that also fulfills our artistic yearnings and expression and the dancers. Give them something that they are proud to do and love to do and can really sink their teeth into.
These days, rock ballets are growing in popularity. Take Birmingham Royal Ballet's Black Sabbath the Ballet as an international example. Here in Minnesota, Collide Theatrical Dance Company has a dance version of Romeo and Juliet set to pop in rock music that they last performed in 2025.
There's four different Romeo and Juliets last year, all completely different. There's two Queen rock ballets this year. They're going to be completely different because when you get to that level of popularity, you know, there's original variations of things and finances have a part of it.
Meanwhile, Ballet Collaboratory has a ballet set to the music of Queen called Freddie Break Free. It takes on the story of Queen's lead singer, Freddie Mercury. In the show, Freddie is played by two people, a dancer and singer Alex Parsons of the cover band Crown Jewels. Empty spaces, what are we living for? Parsons was a big fan of rock operas as a kid.
You were actually telling a story with rock and roll. That idea of that complete album and making everything, every one of your senses as you're getting into this, you're really engulfing yourself into this whole story.
Zoe Henroe, Ballet Collaboratory's artistic director, said she began talking about the potential project almost 10 years ago with the company's executive director. They wanted to figure out how to get people out of their comfort zones.
Dance audiences are dwindling. From national surveys that Dance USA has been taking. They did a big study over the last 10 years, and it used to be that you would have one audience member that would come at least to one show every season. Now they're seeing that same audience member is coming to a show every three seasons.
That stark data means producers need to get out of their boxes too, Henroe said.
If this art form is going to really become an art form for everyone, that we need to break out a little bit more. And we do that by creating rock ballets. You know, I think that when people go to see live music, they want to dance. They want to throw their hands up. They want to do a shimmy. So allowing that kind of like natural social dance, spice of life type of movement also come out in the choreography.
Rock ballet is still ballet. There are beautiful lines and elegant shapes. It's just got a boost of rock and roll to liven things up a bit. And producers are hoping it brings audiences back to the theater. For KFAI, I'm Sheila Regan.
This is 10,000 Fresh Voices, a program of Miniculture on KFAI. Did you know that there are more than 300 public library branches in Minnesota? It takes a lot of people power to keep things running smoothly. Many of these libraries are supported by avid book lovers who volunteer as part of their library's friends group. KFAI producer R. May Rivard caught up with a group of retirees in Brainerd dedicated to the support of their local library.
Nearly every library I've been to has a book sale or two during the year. The proceeds from these sales help support all kinds of things at the library. I'm fairly certain these sales are staffed and run by people who love books, and these volunteers are the worker bees behind every successful sale. As a person who loves to read and support my favorite libraries by perusing any sale I find out about, I was curious about how all this worked. Well, I got a peek behind the curtain with the Friends of the Brainerd Public Library as they sorted and sniffed their way through loads of donated books in the receiving area behind the storefront located in the Westgate Mall up in Brainerd. Meet Judy Reardon.
I live in rural Brainerd. I became involved with Friends of the Brainerd Public Library, probably 25 years ago. One of the gals that I worked with volunteered with them, and it sounded interesting. So I began volunteering at their sales.
I had recently retired, and I wanted to do something with my time. I don't like to sew like I used to do. I don't know how to crochet, knit. So I just decided my love is reading books. I got involved, joined a book club with the Friends, and then found out about this book sale.
That's Karen Johnson, the current president of the Friends of the Brainerd Public Library.
My name is Mary Kalinowski, and I live in the Brainerd-Baxter area. I've been up here about 45 years. I'm a retired RN, worked mostly in the clinics, and I've been retired for about 10 years. So working as a friend of the Brainerd Public Library is one of my volunteer jobs, and the one that I like more than anything else that I do.
This is a group of people that gather every single Tuesday, and we sort through the books. And there are a ton of books that we get that are donated primarily by community members.
My task is when the books come in, we open each box at a time and check the books over. So every book gets handled at least once. We check the cover, make sure it's in good condition. We sniff all our books. We're all good sniffers here. We want our books to smell good. We page through them, fan through them to make sure there's no leftover paperwork in the books that people use for bookmarks. So we occasionally find a letter or star receipts or bookmarks, that kind of thing. We have found money, and several hundred dollars once in cash, and we were able to track the source and give the gentleman his money back. We sort our books and put them in these tubs, and then we move the books from the tubs out into the main part of the store in the correct category.
Judy Reardon, and we would put the books out in preparation for the sale, and then during the sale we would take stacks of books from people and take them up to the checkout table so they wouldn't have to lug all those books around with them. We are located in the Westgate Mall. The mall has been extremely generous to us, giving us space for probably about 10 years. And for the last 5 or so years, we have been located in the same spot, which allowed us to set up as though we were having a book sale. And when we would sort the books, we would just put them out on the tables. And that has really been a lifesaver, saves a lot of time.
Sounds like a workout.
It is. Tuesday is our donation day. So we are here from 9 to 3, and they bring them to the service door of the store that we're located in at the Westgate Mall. About 97% of our books are donated from the public, and the other 3% are ones that the library has cleaned out. We have two pallets end-to-end in our service area in the back. It is not uncommon for those pallets to be empty on a Tuesday morning and be completely filled with boxes of books by the time we leave at 3 o'clock.
Most libraries have a Friends of fill in the blank public library that really do this. They walk alongside their library and say, how can we help you? What can we do? With that money that we raise, it all goes back into our library for what we call kind of the icing on the cake. we don't determine what we should buy. We look to the librarian, and our librarian looks to the staff and says, what do we need? The Friends group wants to donate. What can we use? So our overall goal is to truly support our library with whatever needs they have, and then also support that love of reading.
The dedication of these gals was impressive. It was more work than I would have ever thought went into sorting books. And now I know who to ask to recommend the next Minnesota author for me to read.
Thanks for listening. Support for Mini Culture on KFAI is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For more stories like this, check out the Mini Culture tab on kfai.org. Spending time outdoors is good for us. That's not just common sense. It's been proven again and again by scientific research. And yet, studies show that kids today spend shockingly little time outside. So if nature is so good for children, why aren't they getting more of it? That's where Project Get Outdoors, or Project Go, comes into play. For the past 20 years, Project Go has helped introduce kids to the wonders of the natural world. KFAI's Allison Young went to check it out.
I work with the kindergartners and the fifth graders. And so at the beginning of the year, when I introduce myself, I say, I'm Miss Sarah. I'm with Project Get Outdoors. I'm a naturalist. So I'm a teacher, but I teach out in nature. And then I'll say, what is nature? One year, this kid, he actually raises his hand. He says, nature is joy.
Oh, I love that.
I was like blown away. I didn't even know how to respond to that. I was like, Buddha was sitting there in the class. Wow.
Sarah Holger knows a lot about nature and how nature brings joy, especially to kids. She's a certified naturalist and the founder and program coordinator for Project Get Outdoors. It's a nonprofit that's been connecting young people to the outdoors in Southeast Minnesota for 2 decades. With a focus on underrepresented youth, Project Get Outdoors, or Project Go, runs programs designed to get kids outside.
So there's a lot of ways you can do that. And over the years, our training has expanded from the after-school program setting to now we train therapists, social workers, school counselors on nature-based therapy and ways to work with nature as a partner in healing for youth.
Sarah traces her passion back to a book she read years ago, Richard Louv's Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Louv makes the case that there's a cost to spending too much time indoors, a cost to attention span, general physical health, and our senses. Time in nature, he argues, is good for kids. It can improve cognitive skills and creativity. And that idea hit a nerve for Sarah.
We were outside all the time as a family. So I was very naive and just assuming like all kids were still going outside. So then reading that book was just a real eye opener for me. Like, no, most kids are not going outside. I couldn't comprehend that.
According to the University of Michigan Institute for Social Research, which conducted a long-term study of children's time use habits, children spend less than 10 minutes a day in unstructured outdoor time. The reasons vary from increased screen time and parental fears about safety and strangers to structured schedules and reduced access to natural areas due to urbanization. Becoming comfortable in nature is even harder for the children of migrant workers. And so that's where Sarah first put her energies, with a group of children in Plainview, a small town in Wabasha County with a strong migrant population.
Families that come up from Texas to work at Lakeside Canning Factory and then also on local farms. Every year they come back and forth. And there was kind of a gap in programming for those children. I was like, well, let's try piloting something and let's make sure it's accessible for these kids that aren't able to be in 4-H and FFA and all the other outdoor type things that other kids might be in.
Sarah went door to door, often with a translator, explaining to parents how time in nature could help their kids. The pilot program took off, and soon other communities wanted in.
With Project Get Outdoors, you were constantly moving. There was just so much going on that actually like made the highlight of my day.
25-year-old Christian Fernandez was one of those early Project Go kids. As a second grader, he admits he could never sit still. But because his mother was finishing college and his father had a demanding job, he rarely spent time out in nature with his family. It was Project Go that introduced him to the wonders of the outdoors and gave him a lifelong hobby.
Looking back at it, I don't know where I would be without fly fishing because I'm totally in love with it.
Now, as an adult who works with young kids, Christian sees firsthand what happens when a child gets his hands dirty.
You know, like when a kid puts a worm on a hook for the first time, it's a little bit of like that surprise. They don't want to touch it. But once they get it on the hook and they cast it and they get their first bite, they get that look on their face, that exciting look like they got a fish on. And you can tell, you know, not only did they hook a fish, but they're hooked on fishing now.
Since 2005, Project Go has served over 50,000 children in more than 50 locations across Minnesota. Their programs have been offered at community centers, YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, recreation centers, libraries, latchkey programs, and low-income housing complexes. And as Sarah points out, the programs can be implemented in nearly any setting, sometimes with the intention of simply allowing for discovery and serendipity.
So we might be going out and we're going to look for rocks and learn about rocks, but that's just kind of the mask for the topic. We get out there and we want to look at deer poop or mushrooms.
We would go behind St. Charles High School in Winona County, and we would go play in the woods that was behind there. And I can't remember which activity we were doing, but I remember we had some free time and people were finding a lot of turkey feathers around, and I couldn't find one. And I remember with like 2 minutes left before we wrapped up, I found one, and it was one of those memories that I'll never forget because I was just so happy to find one.
I mean, it's we go wherever it ends up, and oftentimes it totally takes us off the topic of what we had planned for the day, but that's success. To me, that's success. That means you did a good job.
For KFAI, I'm Allison Young.
Hello again, it's me, Micah, simply with the reminder that it is KFAI's Pledge Drive. Give us a call at 612-375-9030, 612-375-9030, to keep stories like this and shows like this, arts reporting like this, your community alive and on the air. You can do that by calling 612-375-9030. More great mini-culture stories coming up after the break.
West Bank staple and one of the few existing small stages in the area, Acadia Cafe, is asking for community support. On April 1st and 2nd, starting at 8 p.m., join us for music, drink, and song to keep Acadia Cafe going strong. AcadiaCafe.com for more details.
Is it time to give your classic car a classic send-off? Honor your car's legacy by donating it to KFAI. Maybe your car isn't technically a classic, but you still want to give it a purpose. Well, we can turn any great ride into a great donation. We accept all kinds of vehicles, from used cars and trucks to RVs and boats. For more information, call us at 855-277-2346 or visit us online at kfai.careasy.org.
Programming on KFAI is supported by the Turf Club, presenting the Flamin' O's live on stage Thursday, April 2nd. The five-piece Twin Cities Ensemble returns to the Turf Club with their new wave rock that has defined them for four decades. Also appearing is Pull String, another Midwest ensemble carving out their nostalgic strand of alt rock. Tickets and more information about the Flamin' O's can be found at first-avenue.com.
Ah, spring is in the air. The trees are budding, the flowers are blooming, the birds are chirping. What? What's that, little friend? The KFAI Spring Pledge Drive is on right now? You say it's the best way to support the non-commercial, community-powered radio that even you're jealous of? Really? I can just go to KFAI.org and click the donate button? It's that fast, safe, and easy? And I can decide how much I want to donate? Wow! Thanks, little friend. And if I donate now, you won't poop on my car?
In for KFEI, I am Michael Whetstone. Thanks much for joining me here on Mini Culture Presents for our pledge drive at KFEI. I myself am a proud participant of the Auto Club, where KFEI pulls a little bit out of my bank account or taps my credit card each month regularly. If you can hear my voice now, I know very well that you understand the value of this weird and unique community space. Help us to keep it as such, to keep it as weird and as unique as it currently is. We can't do that without you. I'm Michael Whetstone, a listener, a weirdo, a volunteer, and most of all, a sustaining member. Please join me in becoming an Auto Clubber, a sustaining member. You can do that by giving us a call at 612-375-9030 or by visiting kfei.org and clicking donate. It is quick, painless, easy, and secure. It really helps us plan our budgets, and it keeps this great station in the black. But we need you to help us to do it, and we have you to thank for it. You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFEI 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and St. Paul, where community grows. Keep us growing. You can do that by calling 612-375-9030. And I will say, for a long time when I first moved to Minnesota, way back when, I thought that if you donated to Minnesota Public Radio, it went to support Minnesotan Public Radio. This is not the case. That entity has a handful of stations, and we do appreciate them. They're great. They're some of our best friends, our NPR. But they are not our partners, like Ampers. They don't share a penny of that tote bag bling with all of the other really great public radio stations here in Minnesota, even just here in the Twin Cities. You need to show us each your support individually. Jazz 88, KMOJ, Radio K, and of course, KFEI. Keep these truly fantastic stations on the air and above the ground. Do it today at KFEI.org. There is a crater where the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was. We are asking you to help us patch that hole. Give us a call at 612-375-9030. 612-375-9030 or KFEI.org and click donate. Thank you. We couldn't do it without you. We can't do it without you. 612-375-9030. Now, back to Mini Culture.
You're listening to Mini Culture on KFAI. Inspired by his love of punk and garage band music of the 1980s, John Clifford started a hair salon by Loring Park in Minneapolis. It's a funky, one-of-a-kind place, helmed by a funky, one-of-a-kind guy, filled with music and Minnesota music memorabilia. He later added a record store, focusing on local music next to the salon, creating, quote, the best waiting room in the city. A welcoming place for a haircut, Hi-Fi Hair and Records is filled with John's craftsmanship, humor, creativity, and a feel-good sense of community. KFAI's Dixie Treichel has the story.
Thank you for calling Hi-Fi Hair and Records.
I'm Johnny Clifford. I have Hi-Fi Hair and Records. My initial training was at the old Horst Mansion over on LaSalle prior to it becoming the big, huge Aveda Institute that it is today. It was just a really cool, funky little art school. I cut hair and I sell records and tell bad jokes. I came into hair because of music. I just wanted to have a really cool little Greenwich Village kind of rock and roll hair salon where it would be just a good community hang and fill the walls with all the crap that I've collected over the years. I've always kind of looked at it as, do I want to do a haircut or do I want to make a haircut? So throughout my entire career of 40 plus years, it's been an amalgamation of bits and pieces of things that I've seen, whether it's hair, whether it's architecture, whether it's flowers, whether it's whatever, and trying to incorporate that into what I do, how I visualize things. About 1980, 81, my friends and I were all discovering, you know, the local garage and punk music that was going on. We all wanted to have cool hair, but none of us had any money. So I started cutting my own hair, and I started cutting all of their hair. It dawned on me that, damn, I guess this would be a cool job. So to me, music has always been that influence behind how people want to look.
Jim Crego. So this is only my third time, but now that I come here, I can't not come here. And I let it grow out enough that he can work some magic with it. He's amazing. There's none better.
Well, I'm going to bring Jim over to the shampoo bowl, and then we're going to cut some hair. So give me a couple minutes. We'll be back in two and two. Oh, geez. Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to get you all wet, Jim. Oh, my God. Oh, we're going to need some more towels. A lot of what I do is by feel. Can you kids at home see this? Yeah? Okay, all right. Kind of having a visual in my head of a shape. Right? I'm a little unorthodox in comparison to the way a lot of people cut. And
with the absolute best results.
Yeah.
If you didn't have the technique, you wouldn't be able to realize your vision, John.
I liken it to watching Keith Moon drum. If ever there was an incredible drummer out there who everybody looked at and said, what the heck is he doing?
Exactly.
It would be Keith Moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hi-Fi hair. I've got the entire wall in the back, which is all local Minnesota stuff, completely dedicated to that. And then there's also local Minnesota stuff just scattered randomly throughout. Some of its posters and photos. On the mannequin there is Slim Dunlap's suit that he wore on his last tour with the Replacements. You know, I think that that's pretty huge to me. Got this fantastic photo of Curtis A. along with other stuff from Curtis A. throughout the room. But to me, he's the quintessential rock and roll icon of the Twin Cities. What else is around here that is pretty freaking awesome? I don't know. There's so much. This photo back here of the Wallets. Nobody talks about the Wallets enough. They were fun, and they were funky, and they were all crazy talented. And you never knew what you were going to see when you went to a Wallets show. Really kind of hit their heyday in the early 80s. Most famous for their song Totally Nude. I had opened this place, Hi-Fi Hair, and there was this space next door that was vacant, on again, off again. And I had a conversation with John Cass of Go Johnny Go Records, and we were just talking about how cool it would be to have a record store that focused more on local music. And lo and behold, we opened a little record store next door. I lovingly call it the best waiting room in the city. Whatever success this place might have, parlay itself into doing something nice for the community in the process, that's a really cool bonus.
Honestly, though, John, you make people feel better.
I've come to a point in my career in which people just sit down and they trust me and let me just do my thing. It is a rare day when a local musician isn't in here getting their hair cut. That's a very rare day.
You're listening to Mini Culture on KFAI. When Palmer's Bar said farewell to Minneapolis, beloved piano player Cornbread Harris drew a big crowd. But Harris says that's nothing compared to the 50s when he played rock and roll with Augie Garcia. Michelle Brook has the story.
The River Road Club is long gone. The site under the Mendota Bridge is now parkland. But musician Cornbread Harris remembers it well.
A lady would come to the door and say, come in, please.
In the 50s, he played piano at the club with Augie Garcia, known as the godfather of Minnesota rock and roll.
Be so quiet and everybody be so peaceful. And Augie would say, stop, stop, stop. And you never knew what the song was. until he started doing whatever the song was. Oh, man. Hang in, baby. We're going for a ride. The audience went wild for that dude. He had the top down on a grand piano, and he would be up on that dancing to his music. Mr. Willie Brown was such a saxophone player. I mean, that gentleman could blow that horn. Oh, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. 6 nights a week and there's only 7, so.
The Augie Garcia Quintet released a handful of singles in the 50s that became local hits and sold 100,000 copies.
Good, simple stuff, you know. Don't get too complicated. You're taking all my books, helping me to school. You're taking all my books, helping me to school. My Ivy League baby, don't think I am no fool. Oh yeah, oh, Ivy League baby.
The Minnesota Music Hall of Fame says their 1955 song, Hi-Yo Silver, is believed to be the state's first rock and roll recording.
Beautiful recording, I thought. For us uneducated recording people, it wasn't bad.
One of the band's most memorable gigs was opening for Elvis at the St. Paul Auditorium in 1956. Elvis was 21 years old. He just released his first album. His manager did not want Elvis sharing the stage with anyone who might be considered a rival rock and roller.
We opened for Elvis, and we opened too. We got kicked off the stage because we opened too good. We upstaged anybody.
After Cornbread left the band, the group continued performing up and down Lake Street in Minneapolis. That's where Augie met his wife, Nancy. She was sitting in the audience at a club called Swedes. I asked Nancy what it was like to date Augie at this time.
You always knew where they were. Because he couldn't get out of that. People always told him that they could travel, you know, but most of the guys didn't want to. Because they were married and some of them had families.
The band broke up in the early 60s. Augie told PBS he got tired of working almost every night of the week. It was kind of a lonesome life. A River Road bouncer helped Augie land a new job as an iron worker building skyscrapers in downtown Minneapolis. Augie liked the views and said he had no regrets. The band reunited for a couple of shows in 1996.
That's actually the first time I ever saw him perform.
This is one of Augie's daughters, Angie Garcia.
The way he could control the crowd and get him dancing, because everyone was dancing that night. And just to see him with that big smile on his face, too, was just something else, too. So that was good. It's a good memory.
Augie was born and raised at St. Paul's West Side Flats, a neighborhood that included Jewish, Lebanese, and Mexican immigrants. The river often flooded in the spring, and the city decided to demolish the flats in the early 60s, displacing more than 2,000 people. Augie often talked about his old friends from the neighborhood.
And he used to have a St. Bernard dog, and he would hook him up to a sled and take the kids for a ride.
Augie's uncle taught him guitar, and he started out playing Mexican ballads.
He would play with his uncle and his dad. They liked to sing and carry on.
Augie stayed connected to the West Side. He helped raise money for a neighborhood school and played guitar at Our Lady of Guadalupe. As a Korean War veteran, he also raised money for a veterans memorial installed in 1998 at the state capitol.
And then he really worked hard to get the memorial because he was already sick by then.
Augie underwent radiation for esophageal cancer in 1987. The treatment worked, and for years he continued performing solo around town. But after the band reunion, the cancer came back.
Even towards the end when he couldn't talk, because the second time he got through cancer, they had to take out his voice box and that, and he had a trach tube and couldn't talk very well, let alone sing. And he would still sit in our sunroom and play the guitar, and you could close his eyes and he'd rock back and forth and just play the guitar, and you could just see that just helped calm him and make him feel better.
Augie died in 1999 at the age of 67. Reflecting on his career in a tape recording, he said if he had to do it over again, he wouldn't change a thing. He'd have the same musicians, and it would be an honor to play with them again. He said, "If you run into me in one of those little nightclubs, please bring up the 50s. If you want to get an earful, you'd be talking to the right guy."
That was, again, some wonderful days.
Cornbread Harris is 98 years old now.
Do you want to play a piano a little bit?
And he's still performing every Sunday night at Schooner Tavern in Minneapolis.
That river boogie boogie all at home.
This is Michelle Brook for KFAI.
Special thanks to Andrea Swenson and Rick Aguilar. You've been listening to Miniculture on KFAI. In the 90s, a radio station, 93.7 The Edge, popped up and imprinted itself onto the minds and hearts of many young Minnesotans who were aching for new music. The Cranberries, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, No Doubt. Radio back then wasn't just a way to listen to music, but a way to discover music. The station also hosted Edge Fest, which forged even stronger connections and memories. Every generation has a nostalgic love for the music of their youth, and Edge fans are no different. KFAI's Matthew Schneeman talked to these fans, now all grown up, about their love for the Edge and 90s alt-rock.
In 1994, the station known as 93X changed its format and became
93.7 The Edge, KEGE, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
And they promised to be Minnesota's new rock alternative. What does that mean? Some teenagers, millennials and Gen Xers now, defined it for me.
Anything by Blind Melon, Stone Temple Pilots,
Jane's Addiction, Beastie Boys, like all that stuff.
Some Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins,
Nirvana, Pearl Jam,
Tori Amos, Fiona Apple,
Alice in Chains.
The music was defiant and often anti-corporate, but there was an irony at the heart of the Edge. It was owned by Disney. It was corporate. It was a giant station and often bragged about the strength of its signal.
You've got an incredible, huge 100,000-watt transmitter. 1,000,000 milliwatts.
Minnesota's news. Niche music for everyone. It was a contradiction for sure. But to the teens coming of age during the station's brief 4-year run, it was a musical lifeline.
I was in high school, and that was the first station that played music that I really liked.
And the station came out of the gate swinging. Here's John Lastman, program director for The Edge.
We had to cleanse the palate, and we knew if we just started playing our format, a lot of people might not even notice the difference, so we thought we'd do something to really call attention to it.
And so, to cleanse the palate, so to speak, they kicked off the station with a pretty weird stunt. Here's an Edge fan named Joe.
Distinctly remember when they switched over and they played REM for like 2 or 3 days straight.
Joe was a teenager working at the Ground Round out in Roseville. And that weekend, the Edge played REM's song, It's the End of the World as We Know It, on loop, all weekend straight.
The cooks on purpose put it on there and loud just to drive people crazy.
Here's another fan, Brandon, who was on the bus with his hockey team waiting to leave.
People were filtering, slowly getting on the bus. This song came on and just kept playing and playing. Everybody kind of had the same suspicion that something isn't right here. Is this song really supposed to be this long? Does it really keep going like that? And finally, one big guy, is a defenseman, just a huge guy, pipes up and says, "Long song, eh?" And we all just died. He just cracked us up because we're all thinking the same thing, but nobody wanted to say it.
John Lastman, program director again.
The cops were showing up because people were calling the police. They thought somebody had died. It was insane.
Yeah, I remember like telling my mom.
Jason, another fan.
I don't know what's going on the radio station, but they keep playing the same song over and over. And she's like, "Well, maybe you should call the station and see if they're okay." And I remember trying to call them, but I was like, "Wait a minute. There's something going on here. There's something going on here."
The funny thing is, now if you were to do that stunt, you could just hit replay and it would play all weekend. Well, we actually had to have some poor kid in the studio with 3 copies of the REM CD playing it over and over.
And thus began 93.7 The Edge. At first, I thought what made The Edge so cool and specific was the music. But what a lot of people remember isn't specific songs, but what they were doing as they listened. Playing the board game Risk with friends, the computer game Civilization, or driving to school.
I mean, I remember I had like a actual like dial in radio Walkman. If I was riding my bike and I went off a jump or a bump or something, I would lose, you know, half the signal, and I'd have to like readjust to, you know, hear The Offspring.
Or lack of technology.
One time I went to Uptown with somebody I just met, and then like school ended. So then the summers I would drive around trying to figure out where Uptown was. There was no Google Maps back then.
You lost Uptown. The biggest memories were of mixtapes and recording music right off the air.
Yeah, in 93.7 The Edge, like I just remember like just hovering over the radio and just waiting until I heard like Nine Inch Nails, The Perfect Drug.
And then you had to wait. I made one tape. I think the first song I recorded was Shine.
This is my older brother, Dan.
What band that was?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Keep me on the do-do.
Oh, the Collective Soul.
Collective Soul. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then I discovered The Edge, and there was no cassette tape in the house that was safe for me recording over it.
I might have had a like Fiona Apple / Tori Amos cassette.
I do remember trying to record Downward Spiral for a girl I liked, and I tried like muting every swear word into it because I didn't think she would like it. I'm sure it's something terrible, but
along with recording music off the air and trading cassette tapes, the other thing people remember about The Edge was Edgefest, the annual festival held out in Somerset, Wisconsin.
I remember like crazy traffic going through Stillwater. There were cops.
A buddy of mine was a state trooper.
On both sides of the highways.
In Stillwater, arresting everybody drunk coming back from Edgefest. But I don't know.
Waiting to pull people over.
I remember going to the campsite at Float Right campsite.
We didn't get a hotel or a campsite because we didn't know better.
And that was crazy. That was a lot of fun.
We slept on an air mattress in the back of my parents' minivan in the Anderson Window parking lot.
I even remember one Edgefest, my best friend and I, we ended up in a fist fight together.
This is Alexa, an Edge fan who loved Edgefest, but was also a bit self-destructive before she was able to come out as a trans woman.
Hitting each other in the face as hard as we could, and there was a crowd all around us like, fight, fight, fight. And we both looked at each other and said, what the f*** are we doing? Like, this is my homie, man.
But I remember Cake had played, and there was like a, I don't know if it was Pizza Hut or Domino's or something.
One of the vendors was Domino's Pizza, and the sun is starting to set.
And during Cake's performance, everybody started throwing all their pizza boxes up in the air.
And it looks like graduation with everybody throwing their caps up in the air.
Thousands of them flying all over from, you know, day two.
I had another person, he said it looked like graduation caps.
Yes, that's the exact vibe.
And my mom was like, what is this? I was like, it's pizza boxes. She's like, well, why would you take pictures of that? That seems stupid. And I was like, because it was cool and it looked like graduation and everybody was just having fun. And
it was just fun, you know, and I was young enough where, you know, it was all kind of innocent, and we just enjoyed it so much.
The festival was a success, and it didn't cost too much, too. My brother's ticket stub from back in the day shows that for one day it was just $25. Another person said it was just $40 for the whole weekend. Here's John again.
And it was really great. We could keep the prices low because we were playing all of the current music from these bands. Yes, they would do the show for either free, or if you were really established, a lot less than it would, you know, usually cost you. So I know we had no doubt when their album was 5x platinum for like $5,000. Same with Bush. We had Green Day when they were just starting out.
The festival wasn't the only success The Edge had.
Well, I'm proud to say that 93.7 The Edge was the highest rated major market alternative station in the country.
So they had great ratings too. So if they were so successful, why did they only last from 94 to 97? Short answer, media consolidation. The Edge already was part of Disney, ABC, and in 1996, the Telecommunications Act relaxed ownership rules, and the Edge's parent company was allowed to buy out their rival station, Rev 105. And they consolidated the alt-rock programming into that frequency. On the last day that the Edge broadcasted under that name, they repeated their opening stunt and played REM's It's the End of the World as We Know It, this time with an added irony, on loop for 24 hours straight.
I'm sure everyone puts the story of what was it, they went off air and were playing the REM until it's the end of the world.
I thought it was cool. I think it reminded me, I mean, a couple things, like video killed the radio star.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to be like a copy of the Russian, the Soviet Union film, and they just put the ballet on. I forget which one it was, the ones, the swans.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
I was 13 and a half when it went off the air, and I had no idea it was happening, and I turned on the radio, and it was my very first preset.
For this fan, Adam, the loss of the Edge hurt. It was changing from alternative rock to heavy metal, 93.7 The Edge to 93X.
And they started playing heavy metal music, rock music, 93X. And I was like, what the hell's going on? And I tried like doing, you know, adjust the dial a little bit. And no, like it wasn't there. And I remember asking somebody up at school about it the next day. And they're like, oh yeah, it's the X now. And I was heartbroken, absolutely heartbroken. It was like losing a pet or something.
To me, The Edge represents the 90s and all its contradictions. Big business playing anti-consumerism music. Not caring, but doing it in a very mainstream way. A fan of The Edge, Elizabeth, put it wonderfully.
You know, I think when I think of other things from that era, that really like was like a cultural alternative like thing. Like, do you remember Surge Soda?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like it's kind of interchangeable, you know, like that kind of like you think you've discovered something new and like quirky and offbeat, but it's really still made by like a major corporation. You know, maybe there's some analogies to The Edge there.
The Edge was as 90s as a 90s radio station could be. Grungy, snarky, and corporate. And was beautiful, in my opinion, because of, and not in spite of, its conflicting ethos. Long live The Edge. The Edge is dead. Special thanks to Remy Maxwell and Weasel and all the grown-up Edge fans that I talked to and reminisced with. And to everyone on Reddit who responded to my post for memories about The Edge, yes, I know, Rev 105 was cooler. For KFAI, I'm Matt Schneeman.
You've been listening to Miniculture on KFAI. Support for Miniculture is provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For more stories like this one, check out the Miniculture tab on kfai.org.
And yes, without a doubt, Rev 105 was absolutely 10,010 times cooler than The Edge. Like, it's not even in the same hemisphere of coolness. But I will also add that both pale in comparison to this station that you are listening to right now. Thank you very much for tuning in and for your continued support of KFAI. You know how cool this place is, going strong for well over 40 years, thanks to you and thanks to our wonderful community of listeners, volunteers, and especially the supporters. Become a member of the KFAI supporting family today at kfai.org. Just by clicking the donate button, you make this amazing and likably weird little radio station possible. This has been Miniculture Presents. My name is Micah Whetstone, and you are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM in the Twin Cities. Support for this program comes from KFAI listener members. Operators are standing by. It is the pledge drive, 612-375-9030. Coming up next, turn your pockets inside out for the upside down.
So my sister says, what are you doing for KFAI during the spring pledge drive? I say, KFAI is great, but I made my annual pledge last spring. And they've already got my old car. What more do these people want? And she says, they love it when listeners become monthly members. Monthly members, I say. Yeah, monthly members, she says. Instead of a one-time payment, tell KFAI you'll donate a fixed amount every month. They get a